Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Be advised, for Pastor Scheidbach, exposing liberal lies and destroying vain philosophies of God-hating, America-despising liberals is like taking candy from a baby. All liberals are hereby cautioned. Pastor Scheidbach is about to rip one or more of your favorite lollipop notions right out of your hand. Uh-oh, too late. A liberal just lost a lollipop. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The Senate warned Iran. Any deal they make with Obama can expire the day the U-Haul trucks arrive at the White House. Here's what the letter actually says. Quote, an open letter to the leaders of the Islamic Republic of Iran. It has come to our attention while observing your nuclear negotiations with our government that you may not fully understand our constitutional system. Thus, we are writing to bring to your attention two features of our Constitution, the power to make binding international agreements, and the different character of federal offices, which you should seriously consider as negotiations progress. First, under our Constitution, while the President negotiates international agreements, Congress plays the significant role of ratifying them. In the case of a treaty, the Senate must ratify it by a two-thirds vote. A so-called congressional executive agreement requires a majority vote in both the House and the Senate, which, because of procedural rules, effectively means a three-fifths vote in the Senate. Anything not approved by Congress is a mere executive agreement. Second, the offices of our Constitution have different characteristics. For example, the President may serve only 2 4-year terms, whereas senators may serve an unlimited number of 6-year terms. As applied today, for instance, President Obama will leave office in January 2017, while most of us will remain in office well beyond then, perhaps decades. What these two constitutional provisions mean is that we will consider any agreement regarding your nuclear weapons program that is not approved by the Congress as nothing more than an executive agreement between President Obama and Ayatollah Khamenei. The next president could revoke such an executive agreement with the stroke of a pen, and future Congresses could modify the terms of the agreement at any time. We hope this letter enriches your knowledge of our constitutional system and promotes mutual understanding and clarity as nuclear negotiations progress. End quote. Well, aside from the technicality that Senate gives advice and consent on treaties, it's a very good letter, very well laid out. But the lib fibbers are frothing with furious fury. Emperor Obama's mad. Unprecedented, unconstitutional, criminal, and even treason are among the charges. Salil Kapoor, popular liberal Obama defender, was practically stuttering with frustration, stammering, I'm not aware of any precedent. I'm not aware of any precedent. It's extraordinary in the sense that it's very unusual. So he's a young'un and apparently a very lazy reporter, or he is depending on the ignorance and laziness of his listeners, because in fact, the Senate is constitutionally involved in the making of treaties, which means the Constitution recognizes the Senate as at least a partner in foreign affairs, and in fact, the Congress, both houses, can act to challenge executive orders it believes exceed the powers of the President, or that countermand legislation, or that violate the Constitution. Furthermore, Democrats in the past have interfered with Republican presidents' foreign policy on several occasions, and not one Dem cried treason. At least none that I remember. So what do we learn from this latest public display of naked hypocrisy from the left? Well, it's treason if a conservative Congress speaks out on foreign affairs issues, but if a liberal Congress does it, it's patriotism. If a conservative speaks out in opposition to a sitting president's foreign affairs policy, it's treason, it's unprecedented, it's extraordinary, it's criminal. But if a liberal speaks out in opposition to a sitting president's foreign affairs policy, well, it's all American, it's patriotic. America. Are you ever going to get tired of the game these liars play and wrest the power out of their hypocritical hands? Another way to put it that probably actually gets to the heart of it is this. If a liberal president is opposed by conservatives, well, it's treason. And in the case of the president alleged, it's racism. It's contrary to good form. It's evil. But we expect that from partisan Dems. What is particularly disheartening, well, to me, is how many confused Christians there are out there who have bought into the pre-revolution reformed king is law theology and believe it's against the Bible's teaching in Romans 13, 1-4, where we are told that the powers that be are ordained of God, and we are told that any who resist the power resist the ordinance of God, and we're told by Peter that we are to honor the king, and that we are to submit ourselves to every ordinance of man. So listen carefully, Christian patriots everywhere. It's okay to oppose this president. First, Christ is the ordaining power, and so he is the ultimate divine authority, really, over every kingdom on the earth. Romans 13 does say God ordained the powers, does it not? And does not that mean then that there is no power that isn't under God's ordaining authority? Think about it. Second, that authority is charged by the king to use the sword he gave them to execute wrath against evildoers. And that, by the way, is its only divinely appointed role. Is it not obvious to any sensible man or woman that if the government employs the sword in service of wicked men, or if it fails to employ the sword as directed to execute wrath against evildoers, then it therefore stands in violation of the charter of their divine appointment? And by the way, he appointed the family and the extended community of his congregation to take care of individual welfare needs, not government. Anyway, third, as for honor the king, we don't have a king, okay? Except Jesus Christ, period. There is no king in America. The only king in America is Christ Jesus, the Lord, truly the only legitimate king in all the earth. And furthermore, the ruling power ordained by Christ over America is the Constitution of the United States, not Obama. Therefore, we honor the king when we uphold the Constitution. Those who countermand and circumvent the Constitution, these are the ones who are resisting the divinely appointed power in America. They are the ones guilty of dishonoring the king, recognized in the Declaration as the ultimate authority in America and all the world, by whom all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Fourth, we do submit ourselves to every ordinance of man, and yet, when such ordinances put us in direct conflict with the higher and ultimate authority of Christ, we defer to Christ, as did our forebears before us, who, when confronted with an ordinance that forbade them to speak in Jesus' name or to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, said, quote, judge in yourselves whether we should obey God or man, end quote. Acts 5:29. That's right. Okay. You Christians who are forsaking our heritage. Yeah, you know, just like those Baptists during the period leading up to the Revolution who refused to take your license to preach, you Protestants and Catholics, who pointed to the Bible and to heaven and said, this book is our license, and he who sits in the heavens is our authority. And they defied the Protestants' and the Catholics' efforts to control the conscience of men and to decide for others what they will believe. We defied you then, and we defy you today. And if you don't understand that what I'm addressing here is pertinent and relevant to today, look at what's happening in Florida. In Lake Worth, Florida, the government there is trying to force the churches in that city to take a business license to function as an assembly in that city. They've gone so far as to send spies into one congregation, I mean, shades of KGB. And because they were meeting in a coffee shop, for which, by the way, the church did have a license to sell Java, since their license did not include preaching, they were ordered to evacuate the building? So, Liberty Council is involved in that, and they'll likely get this matter resolved. But the point here is that this sort of thinking on the part of many Christians is opening the door to this nonsense. We're returning to pre-revolution foolishness. Anyway, fifth, while it is true that the powers that be are ordained by God, that does not mean everyone who holds that power is appointed by God to hold it. Hosea 8 verse 4, they have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, and I knew it not. And finally, sixth, the injunction to honor the king does not include bowing the knee to a dishonorable usurper. Remember Elisha's response to King Ahab when he said, were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee. All right, he said that to his face, by the way. Nor does it mean holding our tongue from rebuking an errant ruler. Jesus called the king a fox, and John the First Baptist publicly rebuked the king for his sins. Paul challenged the rulers of his day by holding them accountable to the laws of the land. And these limp-wristed Christianettes who've wrested these verses, Romans 13 and others, and distorted them, stretched them into a fig leaf covering for their naked cowardice, are as of right now left standing in their shame. They're nothing but Laodicea, believing their prosperity is evidence of their favor with God, saying, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. And Jesus responds by saying, and you don't know that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Revelation 3:17. You know, judgment begins in our house, Christians. So let's look at what the Senate did in view of the truth that the Constitution is the divinely appointed power over Obama, over Congress, over the judiciary, and over all the land. According to the divinely appointed power in America, Congress can act to invalidate an executive order by, well, in one way, passing legislation that is in conflict with that order, thus invalidating the order by making it illegal. Of course, in this case, the Congress, both houses, would need enough support in opposition to the president's executive order to override a veto. Another way that Congress, and again speaking of both houses here, can invalidate an executive order is by denying funding for the implementation of the executive order. And as you know, this was tried with Obamacare, but the gopers caved when they faced a little resistance. Yet, again, obviously, however, the bill would have been vetoed, and we know that we don't have the strength needed in the Senate yet to override a veto. 2016's coming. The veto power of the presidency and the rare occasions when there is sufficient support for an override make this very unlikely. However, there are examples of executive orders being invalidated by the courts. For example, when Clinton attempted to use executive order, 12954, to prevent the federal government from contracting with companies that had strikebreakers, so-called scabs, on their payroll, a federal appeals court ruled the order violated the National Labor Relations Act of Congress as interpreted by the Supreme Court in a case heard in 1938, and so it invalidated the order. So anyway, the letter did not say anything that is not true. The Senate must approve treaties. They don't ratify them, by the way. They give their advice and consent. And if President-elect Obama attempts to strike a deal with Iran by executive order, it is possible, even if in the current circumstance it is unlikely, that it could be invalidated or defunded. And as the letter points out, a succeeding president can reverse the order, and Congress could, in the future, amend it. So all of this is to say that what the senators did is not untrue. But then the question comes up whether what they did violates the law. There is an old law called the Logan Act that some have brought out and blew the dust off of it, and they're trying to claim that these senators violated that law. Well, when I get back from the break, I'll address that more particularly for the moment. Consider that the charge this is unprecedented is patently disingenuous, or it's woefully ignorant. One, the Democratic House Speaker during Reagan's residence at the White House met with Nicaragua's Contra leaders in direct opposition to his foreign policy regarding Nicaragua at that time. And two, Congressional Dems sent a letter to Nicaraguan leader Ortega in defiance of President Reagan's foreign policy. And three, the late Senator Kennedy sent a letter undermining Reagan to the Soviet Union. And four, in defiance against Bush, three Dems went to Iraq in 2002 to interfere with that Republican president's foreign policy. And five, Pelosi went to Syria in 2007 to meet with Assad. Don't forget that. So if it's good for the gander, then it's good enough to cook their goose, too. I'll be right back.
Every corruption we see in our houses of government began in our houses of worship. Christians began departing from the founders of our faith and ignoring God's laws long before our politicians began departing from our founders and ignoring the laws of our land. Revival must begin in the house of God with a return to the old paths. Lighthouse Baptist Church invites you to join us on the old path. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face, to confront. Many encounters are routine happenstances, but even these can have a major impact on our lives. I'm sure each of you listening to this can think of encounters that made a difference in your life. But the greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps you've encountered God in the past, but it's been a while since you experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Perhaps you've never experienced God, and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015, and when you do, your life will take on new meaning and purpose, and you'll know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria. Go to santamarialighthouse.org. The Brain Massage Radio Show is heard by thousands every week. The demographic of the audience is very strong in the over 40 market, with a large and growing number of younger listeners tuning in to get their weekly brain massage. The popular talk show host is offering an opportunity to local businesses to access this vibrant audience, ready to reward those who support one of their favorite radio shows. Call Janet Fisher to learn how you can reach this audience with information about your products and services. Call 503-9945, 503-9945. The science of a brain massage. The brain masseur uses words like fingers to massage your gray matter, forming insights in the mind that stimulate the pituitary to signal the adrenal, to release nonepinephrine neurotransmitters, and to fire these neurons through the sympathetic nervous system affecting the heart. The skilled brain masseur uses incisive logic to arrest our attention and nuanced razor-sharp rhetoric to cut away the tangled knots in our brains. When these knots are removed, the electrical impulse of stimulating insights fire the neurotransmitters so they can leap the synapse gaps. This generates a sparkling effect in the brain that can cause the countenance of a brain massage listener to glow. Additionally, sudden outbursts of energy caused by the release of glucose throughout the body increases the heart rate, while the pituitary gland in the brain releases all five types of dopamine at once. And this creates that sense of euphoria experienced by many brain massage listeners. And that's the science of a brain massage. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. And Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. You know, often I wish I had more time with you. Today is one of those times. I got all kinds of stuff here that I could talk to. A lot of biblical insight helpful to any God-fearing patriot who wants a biblical approach to sorting out that Ferguson fiasco. And the whole race issues confronting us right now. There's one thing I want to squeeze in here, and that is that Holder, finally, it seems, rightly responded to what happened the other day when someone shot and seriously wounded two police officers during what one described as a bigger group than had gathered for a while there, where, quote, the mood was unusually tense, end quote. Expecting something? We don't know who did the shooting. It is presumed that some agitated black activist did it, right? Or some intruder from an out-of-town Black Panther group, right? That's probably what most of us would think, because that's the kind of thing we've been seeing going on. But what if it was some white cracker, you know, trying to undermine the protest by, quote, tainting it with violence, end quote, as one black pastor said when expressing his suspicions about the shooter? Yeah, only a white cracker would do that. You know, you guys did a pretty good job of connecting your protest with violence without any help from white crackers. Anyway, someone went crackers, all right, and it appears tried to provoke the police to fire into the crowd of protesters. It did not work. The police kept their cool. But Holder finally came out and unequivocally condemned the action. Quote, what happened last night was a pure ambush. This was not someone trying to bring healing to Ferguson. This was a D-word punk. A punk who was trying to sow discord, end quote. Strong words from Holder. He never comes out like that unless he's attacking some white cracker. Yeah, makes you wonder if you're being set up here. I guess we can all have our suspicions, eh? Anyway, it's interesting. Wasn't Michael Brown a punk who attacked a police officer on the fateful day he got shot? And what's with Washington Post in this article where I'm getting this information? After the officer involved in that shooting has been cleared of any wrongdoing, they go forward with this, you know, police shooting of an unarmed black man mantra that stirred up, or certainly at least implicitly justified, the Ferguson riots in the first place. Here is my point. If it's important to the story to repeatedly mention that the black man in question was unarmed, then is it not equally important to the story to repeatedly mention the fact that the black man was attacking the officer? Well, I guess that depends on what you're trying to do with your story, what your agenda is. If you're trying to agitate racial tensions, well, then you don't mention the punkish behavior of the black perpetrator. You only mention that he did not have a gun. However, if you want to help facilitate healing in this situation, then you might mention that, but you would also remind everyone of the context in which it occurred. Finally, and it simply goes to how crazy this has become, how much insanity seems to have gotten injected into this country's thinking when it comes to race relations, the parents of Michael Brown respond to this latest attack on police officers saying, quote, We reject any kind of violence directed toward members of law enforcement, end quote. Well, now, would that include the violence of their son against the officer that shot him in self-defense? Now, folks, listen, their loss is indeed incalculable. But shouldn't this salient fact be included in their calculations somewhere as they're trying to sort out and understand what happened? Look, red and yellow, black and white, they are all precious in his sight. We must stand up against this idea that what some punk on a bus says represents the sentiment of his race. Quote, you can hang him from a tree, but he'll never sign with me. There will never be an inward SAE, end quote. You gotta be kidding me. That graduate from the Jesuit Preparatory School of Dallas no more represents the sentiment of the white race generally than do the statements of black radicals saying things like, quote, kill the cracker, end quote, and, quote, if you want freedom, you're going to have to kill some cracker babies, end quote, and, quote, I believe in the death and destruction of all white men, end quote. Certainly, no one would think that represents the black race generally. Red and yellow, black and white, we must stand against bigotry and racism of any color. Okay, but I promise I'd offer some insight into the charge that the 47 senators who signed off on that open letter to the leaders of Iran violated the Logan Act. First, what is the Logan Act? A law passed, I think, in 1799. It says, quote, any citizen of the United States, wherever he may be, who, without authority of the United States, directly or indirectly commences or carries on any correspondence or intercourse with any foreign government or any officer or agent thereof, with intent to influence the measures or conduct of any foreign government or of any officer or agent thereof in relation to any disputes or controversies with the United States, or to defeat the measures of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. End quote. Sounds to me that might apply to what Obama's doing in Israel right now, interfering with that election. But anyway, it goes on to say this section shall not abridge the right of a citizen to apply himself or his agent to any foreign government or the agents thereof for redress of any injury which he may have sustained from such government or any of its agents and subjects and so on. But anyway, the provisions of the Logan Act apply when these actions are taken, quote, without the authority of the United States, end quote. Well, the Senate is part of the authority of the United States, is it not? According to the Constitution, anyway. And as I argued in the first segment, the Constitution acknowledges the interests of the Senate in foreign affairs when it stipulates that treaties must have the advice and consent of the Senate before the President may ratify them or conclude them. Clearly, this shows that the law of the land recognizes the legitimate interests of the Senate in matters of agreements that are made between the U.S. and foreign powers. Now, in the past, when this came up regarding Democrat interference with a sitting president's foreign policy, namely Gerald Ford, Republican, well, the State Department told Congress that, quote, nothing in Section 953, which is the Logan Act, would appear to restrict members of the Congress from engaging in discussions with foreign officials in pursuance of their duties under the Constitution, end quote. Now, that was back in 1975, when Senators John Sparkman and George McGovern went to Cuba to meet with officials there. The rationale was that these men were acting in pursuance of their respective offices in the capacity of senators, and that they acted within their authority stipulated in the Constitution since they did not represent themselves as having the authority to make a treaty with that government on behalf of the United States. But when Jesse Jackson went to Cuba, and Nicaragua, and returned with several Cuban political prisoners seeking asylum, Reagan investigated the possibility that Jackson had violated the Logan Act. Well, no charges were made, but that would probably be the closest case where the Logan Act would apply, since, in fact, the Logan Act was intended to restrict private citizens from engaging foreign powers independent of the, quote, authority of the U.S. government, end quote. So, no. The 47 senators who signed the open letter to Iran did not violate Logan by interjecting themselves into the process, since they are constitutionally part of the authority of the United States. And since the Constitution recognizes their legitimate interest in agreements made between America and foreign states, and since they merely stipulated what is true regarding their role in that process, and what is true regarding the powers of this president to make binding agreements with foreign powers without the advice and consent of the Senate. It therefore seems ludicrous that anyone would think they could be prosecuted on the basis of a law that is 216 years old and that has never been used successfully to prosecute anyone, which would make it vulnerable to the invocation of a legal principle of desuetude. That's a technical term from Latin meaning disuse. It basically means that a law that has a long history of never being used becomes void or lapses and becomes unenforceable. So anyway, as the left scrambles for some way to punish Netanyahu for daring to publicly oppose their emperor, and these 47 senators likewise, we sit back with satisfaction knowing that our Constitution keeps getting in their way. The principle of checks and balances continues to frustrate the tyrant's attempt to make himself dictator-in-chief and continues to work as a force in this country, holding back, restraining the efforts of those who desire to steal from us our liberties. Well, this has been a very interesting show. Come Sunday night, 6 p.m. for a full Bible message titled Honoring America's King. You're going to love it. That is, if you love God and His Word. If you're one of those effeminized Christianettes cowering in Obadiah's caves, content with your blindness, imagining that your prosperity is an indication of divine favor, when actually you disgust him so much he's about to spew you from his mouth. Or, you can take it, just hang on, it's the truth. Now, or if you're one of those pastors of Baal, feeding the only God you really serve, your belly, at Jezebel's table, well, then you probably won't like my message this coming Sunday. But you really should come and hear it anyway, okay? I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know that you see they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000, that's 1-888-770-8000, and leave a message for me on our listener response hotline. It's a free call to anyone within the continental United States. Now, from outside the country, or for those who would prefer it, you can email me by going to our website at thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. If you're in a hurry when you call, just give me lights on, lights off, and hang up. But if you will, please leave a message for me. I'd love to hear what you're thinking about the things we talk about on this show. Positive or negative, either way, by the way. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
King David wanted to bring the Ark of God into Jerusalem. God's prophet encouraged him and told him it was God's will. For this very special project, David commissioned the building of a brand new cart to carry the precious Ark of God. As they rolled down the road, they hit a bump. To keep the ark from falling off the cart, the driver reached out and touched it. This brought death to the driver. David became afraid of the Lord. He sent the ark away and he went home troubled. Later, David understood from the scripture that the only proper way to transport the ark was for the priests to carry it. He decided to try it again, and this time he did it according to God's instructions. And everything worked out beautifully. David was a good man with good motives, but his plan was flawed. Many good men with good motives are attempting to do a good work, but they're doing it the wrong way, and it has brought spiritual death to our churches. Are you in a new cart church? Come to an old path church this Sunday. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information.
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face, to confront. Many encounters are routine happenstances, but even these can have a major impact on our lives. I'm sure each of you listening to this can think of encounters that made a difference in your life. But the greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps you've encountered God in the past, but it's been a while since you experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Perhaps you've never experienced God, and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015. And when you do, your life will take on new meaning and purpose, and you'll know that God is real. Go to santamarialighthouse.org. Call 805-347-9887 for more information.
Want to help us slay the dragons of deceit with the sword of the Spirit? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.